Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day, from finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process. Our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. I'm super excited today to be joined by the founder of DianePrince.co and the recruiting agency 360. Diane, super excited to have you on the show today. Really excited to be talking about how you have had the experience of taking and building a staffing agency, selling it for $28 million. I think that's something that a lot of our audience has questions about, thinks about, is trying to figure out like how do they get their agency to a spot where they can have an exit. Very few make it to that path, and excited to have a conversation with you today.
Hey, David. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and jump in. I would just love to know, if you could just tell us, what's your journey? How did you get into the staffing industry?
Yeah, well, I have a bit of a different story because I don't know if you and I talked about this, but people tend to say like, oh, just like everybody else, I fell into it. But my story was different. It was very deliberate. So I did not have experience in staffing except for temping. Like I temped through college and grad school. My first temp assignment was in London. So I temped around London, which was awesome. And that's how I kind of knew what it was. I tapped beer at a pub for one night and I had no idea how to do it. And I think my first customer goes, how fast do you type? And then I started temping. So that's how I knew what temping was. But the way that I got into staffing and starting my own business was the idea of wanting to build a business. So my partner and I decided, like, we set out to build a business that we could scale and sell. And then we worked from that. So that's why I think it's so important to like align your vision, like think about what your vision is. So that's what we wanted to do. Like that was the goal. And then we figured out from there, what kind of business could we scale so that we could sell it. And that's how we arrived. You know, it was a lot of thinking about a lot of like listing out different kinds of companies, you know, like a restaurant probably wouldn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thinking about all the different kinds of businesses we could start. And then when we hit on staffing, that was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea.
I ask that question to every guest that's on here. And that is, I think you're one of maybe definitely in the 1% or less. most of us are, well, I kind of ended up over here. So, yeah. And with that, I'm excited to talk about the fact that you were intentional about it going into it. Probably made it so you made a lot of decisions differently than some do when they're getting into the industry. But just to jump right into it, like, what are some of the most critical factors when it comes to kind of building your agency and making sure that you're ready for an acquisition?
Yeah. Okay. So, well, first of all, building it to make sure that you're ready to like to get started in it, and then going for an acquisition is another thing. But like, I mean, I'm very entrepreneurial. So if you do have the entrepreneurial drive, I mean, the best way is to just go for it. Like when I started, I literally did not even know what workers' comp was until I placed my first temp. So it's like figuring it out along the way. Now there's a lot more education and resources. We bought a book. There used to be a book. You remember those dummy series, the black and yellow books, Dummies Guide?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, I think I might even have one on my bookshelf.
I'm like, yeah, there is the Dummies Guide to Starting a Temp Agency.
Oh my God, is it really?
Yeah. I wish I could find it now. So that's how we started. So it was really very limited information. We just learned as we went and made a ton of mistakes. If I were doing it again today, which I might, I don't know. But if I did it again today, I would do things a lot differently. Like we were very complicated in how we had set up, especially at first.
Yeah. What are some of the lessons that you learned along the way?
Well, we did so much ourselves. Like, we didn't even know what an employer of record was. So we just did it. So that was really expensive, complicated. We used ADP and Paychex, you know, different times, but we were constantly funding payroll. We were taking out loans to fund payroll and then managing all the people that were doing it. So that's something I would definitely do differently. Another thing was we would tend, you know, this is pretty common with entrepreneurs, like we get the shiny new object syndrome. And so we started a few different business lines that were totally distracting and we didn't need to do. So those were two, I think those were like two of the main things that were mistakes that we made. And then also, I guess the third thing is I was a really bad manager. So like, that's something that now I teach now. Now I coach people on that, because I really realize like some people, very few are naturally born managers. It's really rare. So that's another thing that like huge mistakes that, you know, just in how I manage people was terrible.
Yeah. That's funny. Just when you talk about like the focus and the starting new business lines. And I think that is one of the, I've seen it with software companies, with staffing firms, but it's like going into a new line of business, opening up a new territory, like going into a new country as a staffing or as a software company is something I see people do too soon. So that's interesting to learn that as a lesson as well.
Like people set up like bullhorn. So they might write a new software, or, you know, like they start all of a sudden they're like software developers, or start a school, or, you know, that was one thing we did. Yeah. So like things like that too, that are just like major, or I'm going to do career coaching on the side, or just kind of totally diversions.
Yeah. And with that, so when it comes to like what to, I'm going to go all the way back to like the ADP and like the fact that the outsourcing some of those elements, like how would you decide, or what, if you were to approach it, what would you keep in house? What would you take out of house? Like,
yeah, I would. And I mean, now too, because there's so many options with virtual assistants. So, you know, we're talking about that before the show. So I would take in-house, and it depends on who you have on your team and what your skill set is. So like if you're, say you're a director of sales at a staffing agency, at a big staffing agency, and you want to start your own agency. So then in that case, you've got contacts, you're good at biz dev. I would outsource. If you're doing it, you could start by with really being a solopreneur. If you wanted to start that way, I would totally outsource I would get an ER. I would outsource all the back office, including collections. Like we had full-time people to do all these things, like manage unemployment claims. I would do that. I would also start with a bookkeeper from the beginning, if that's not your
style. Yeah. I learned that one.
And then also, like, if you are starting out on your own, and say you're really strong in sales, I would invest in a sourcing arm that could also be virtual assistants. And then I would start from getting things going, though, is more like white glove as possible, like unscalable while you're learning and figuring it out. Then you can automate things later on. And the flip side, there's people who are really strong at recruiting who want to start. That's a little harder, though. It's a little harder to, you can't really outsource biz dev from the beginning. That's harder to do.
So you think one of the core skills to going out on your own is you have to have the biz dev part dialed in, or have a path. You have to have job orders, right? Like that's, how do you start your staffing agency?
And I mean, I have helped people, like, just, you know, shameless plug, but like I have helped people who, like, typically with our recruiting agency 360, most of the people who hire me to get help are really good at recruiting, and I help them to understand the biz dev part and fill that part in. So it's kind of more mysterious than people think it is. Yeah. Just what I like to do is really help people to find their own unique biz dev voice. And that's kind of the little nugget. That's really the differentiator in a lot of ways.
Like, how are you standing out from the 100 other people that are reaching out to every business trying to get, trying to get a job order?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Tell me a little bit about kind of the process of going to market and selling the business. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I've sold a few businesses, so I've had different processes. But in the exit that we were talking about, since we knew that's what we wanted to do going into it, we were really intentional about how we were building it along the way. So after about, it was like in year two, we started meeting with an investment banker. That's how we sold our first business, was through an investment banker. So we would meet with him quarterly. so we had it, we had an advisory team, and yep. back then there weren't really like, there were not staffing agency coaches back then. Like we belonged to the ASA and SIA. So we got help from them, but there weren't really like mentors like there are today. We had our advisory board, and then there was like a lawyer, a CPA, and our accountant, our finance person. So anyway, so we would meet with their investment banker quarterly and just say like, here's where we're at. What do we do next? Like, what are the next steps? And then we basically listened to him.
That's great. And the fact that you've gone through exits to sound like you had the with different buyers, right? You had a family, and then you also worked with, I think we had talked about, so private equity that you'd mm-hmm. sold to as well. Mm-hmm. What's the experience like depending on who you're working with?
Yeah, it was really different in different ways. So like with the first exit, the investment banker route was great because we learned so much. Also, like at that was the biggest exit I've had. So at that level, yeah. you really do want somebody, you need like a professional person to help you through that. And one of the things that I really learned, a big takeaway was how much people are willing, you know, me and other people are like typically are willing to leave on the table. It's like when you first start out, you're watching every single penny. And then at the end, like when you're going through the deal and you just wanted the deal to close, it's like you'll walk away from like millions of dollars. I mean, not in our case, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that was one thing that they really helped us with, is like negotiating and standing up for us. So that was, it was the investment banker part was great because, I mean, they did a lot of the work. They shopped it out. They, you know, make a book and bring multiple people to the table. But there was still a lot of work involved. Like I just had my second baby and I was like managing that part of the deal. So there was still a lot involved in making the deal go through. But yeah, it was definitely very helpful having an investment banker in that. But it's super expensive.
And I know that I've heard there's, you know, different stages where it makes sense to bring an investment banker in. Tell us a little bit about like, what is Diane Prince and Company? What do you guys do and how do you help agencies navigate some of this?
Yeah. So I've been coaching. I started business coaching I started consulting with other companies, different kinds of startups, not just staffing agencies, about 10 years ago. So I had a clothing business. And then after that, then I started consulting with other startups. Just started like helping, like I would take really active roles like head of sales or head of ops. And so now, my coaching practice has evolved so that now I work with staffing agencies, recruiting agency owners, and I have different offers basically to help them. Like anything that I'm looking at, like what do people need? What are the yep. biggest needs? So one of them is learning how to sell. I mean, that's like, yeah, I get several people message me like
hands-on experience. Yeah.
I mean, several people message me on LinkedIn like every day, and it's like we always ask, like, what are your biggest challenges? It's usually selling. It's usually biz dev. So that's one thing that we're heavy on, is like teaching that. But then we also teach people really like to build a business around, whether you're a recruiter, staffing, RPO. We work with people too. But then like, how do you really intentionally build a business around that? Because a lot of people that do fall into it, like we said, or they work at a staffing agency, they start one, but they haven't really thought through what they want to get out of it. So really, like, I help people to really intentionally build their business based on what they want to get out of it. That's different for everybody. And then I also have, we were talking earlier, like I have a virtual assistant business now as well.
Yeah.
We specialize in staffing agencies. And so we realized a lot of people have great experience with VAs, some don't. So we have an actual like integrated, managed, it includes sourcing, it includes biz dev support. I also coach the VAs. So that's another.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. When you said that, it's like having a VA has been, it's when you get the right person, and which is hard to do. It's hard to find somebody that can actually come in, which is the fact that you have them trained on the specific things that people in staffing need. It could be a game changer from a time perspective.
Like yeah, totally.
So much time back. That's amazing. Well, what are some of the, I mean, we've been in interesting times in the market. It feels like I'm hearing a lot more optimism these days. I think since the rate cut, I mean, there's still, you know, there's a lot of holds on what's going on because of the election coming up. We hear that mm-hmm. quite a bit. But what are some of the market trends that you're seeing, and where do you see the market going over the next 6 months to a year?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a dip in a lot of sectors. Some have increased. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like, one of my clients and I were looking at, like, locum tenens have gone up 30%.
Education.
I have some clients in the education kind of spaces. Some of my clients are in skilled trades. But it's interesting because people have this like idea that the market has tanked so much, which it's down. But if you're looking at like the entire market size, it's like a $218 billion market. So yeah, really, like how much do you need? unless you're Randstad, you don't need, you know, it's like, yeah. So I don't know. Like, I don't have a crystal ball. I honestly try not to pay too much attention to forecasts. And like, I look at what, like in the day-to-day, like what is the market telling me? And what clues can I take and how can I pivot? Because sometimes you need to pivot. Sometimes roles become obsolete. Other times I think people pivot too soon because with staffing, the part of the beauty of the industry is the dips because then there's the peaks and valleys, right? So like, you have to have those valleys in order to have the peaks. And that's how this business works. If it was just flat or if it was always going up, it just wouldn't really be a sustainable industry.
Yeah. I think it's fairly volatile. And then somebody the other day, and I've probably said this on the podcast already, don't remember it, but they're like, if you just remove COVID, like if you take 2019 and draw a line to where we're at today, it looks like a nice straight graph of where we should have been. And it's just take out all of that, that kind of the spikes upward and downward. Yeah. We're getting right back to where we would have been otherwise. So it's interesting.
It's interesting too, because some of the people I work with or talk to are like, they started around 21, 20.
Yeah.
Things were so good. And so now like their experience has only been this amazing, like I did $2 million in my first year and now I'm doing 250,000. And you know, it's like, because that's when they got into it and it was all, and also maybe they're learning maybe entrepreneurship isn't for them because it is, this is what it's like, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely a roller coaster. And you've talked about this a little bit already, but when it comes to scaling a staffing agency, you know, building towards an exit, what role does technology play from your perspective?
Yeah. I mean, technology is huge, obviously, and like ever evolving. When you're starting, I do think I mentioned the white gloving it for part of it, because one really common mistake that I see people make is trying to automate when they don't already know it's working.
Yeah.
Automation is great. By the way, we also have one of our team members is a recruiting and biz dev engineer, which is a new role that I think everybody needs to have, whether you have a fractional person or an in-house person, depending on your size. But it's gotten to the point where you need an engineer to help you to keep up with technology because there's some really, really powerful stuff. Like, for example, one of the things we do is we automate, like one of my favorite ways to get new business is keeping in touch with past current clients and candidates and knowing when they have job changes. So like we have a process with a technology to actually automate that so that you still sound like a human. And obviously like automated, like I've done cold email outreach since like the invention of email, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that. What's exciting, I think, is knowing, especially like I've been in the industry for a long time, and then as there's new technology introduces, I love like picking up on the new technologies and keeping super relevant in that. And then also bringing in like old school things like reference checking and, you know, like how does that combine with like bleeding edge AI and how do you make that super powerful? So really technology can play a big role if you use it the right way. You have to know it's going to work first. You have to get some traction. You have to figure out what your proven process is, then automate it.
I could not agree more. I think it's one of the lessons I personally have learned over, and I think entrepreneurship, starting a business, like says you're eventually going to do a lot of the things, but knowing when to do them is such a critical element of it. And so many people try to automate, like people before they have the LLC formed, they're like, hey, we want to buy this automation software. It's like, this is not the time. You don't know what do you have customers yet? Nope. But we're going to start by automating before we have customers. Like, well, maybe that's not the right path. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah.
And you know, it's not really their fault because it's like what you hear, even like lead gen companies, they can only work if you already have some proven traction. You can just hire people to just expect that they're going to bring in this flood of leads if you already don't know what's going to work for you. And it can be a hard pill to swallow to kind of hear that, because people just, you know, want the...
Actually, I haven't even thought about that, but there's so many stories I know of people like, oh, we tried this lead. This lead gen company is going to change the game for us. And it's like, if your value prop's not working today, like scaling something that doesn't work, it doesn't work. So
yeah, if anyone who's listening to this thinking about hiring a lead gen company, ask to hear some recordings of their calls.
Yeah.
You want to know. And then also along the way. So like, because that's something people just assume like, oh, they're experts. Always listen. Like you say, you hire them, make sure that you're listening to some of the calls so that you can make adjustments as well.
That's key. And we tested out, but now you got me on the tech side of it, but I tested out an AI SDR tool just to like see. It's not something, I just wanted to see how it worked. And the messages were, I'm sure it's getting better and going to eventually be a game changer, but the messages were horrific. I was just like, oh my God, I can't imagine sending these messages to anybody. So, and that's a different play, but similar space. You know, for the people that are listening to this that are excited about growing, scaling their business, getting to an exit, we've talked about a handful of them, but are there any pitfalls that they can, you know, say like, avoid this, don't do this, specific lessons that you would try to instill in them?
Yeah. I mean, I think like once top elements are, okay, that visioning, like understand what you want to do. Like, what do you want to get out of this? And then niche. A lot of people are afraid to niche. They're afraid they're going to miss out on another opportunity. Yeah, if they niche, there is a fear. There can be, and on my LinkedIn, like I have all these, I have 9 posts lined up on how to choose your niche. Yeah. And that's something we do in RA362, but it's really important. But you can look at niche too. So you want to define your niche. There's steps that you can do that. There's going to be experimentation. Don't be afraid to niche. Don't be afraid to like super micro niche. I mean, we did title insurance people and got to like $1 million billing weeks. So it's like, and that was, they were about $25 an hour pay. So like with it, we had a lot of time to get to that. So really like, don't hesitate to get super niche, but also know that doesn't mean like you can think about niche as a front end issue, like that it really helps with your marketing. It helps you to be a specialist. It helps you to have more, build up your candidate pipeline. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that if you have an opportunity that you can also take other opportunities if you feel like that's going to help you. And then building your team is really important. And then look at like, that's one thing I mean, it's funny that you said that about the LLC, because I always do everything before I'm ready, except for hiring. So like, I don't even care about an LLC. I'm like, if it's the end of the tax year, yes. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. I actually agree with that. You don't actually have to have that in place to start.
Just get some clients. Just get some sales. Bring in the money. Get that like first, get your first dollar bill, you know?
Yeah.
And then look at it like with the building the team. I mean, that's really evolved too. And we talked about virtual assistants, but always along the way, look at what is it that I'm trying to accomplish? So instead of saying I need to hire a recruiter, for example, or what, you know, whatever it is, when you find yourself saying that or being excited, like this is, you know, what I want to do, you know, Q4, I'm going to hire, look at what you're trying to accomplish from that hire, and then explore ways that you could achieve that. And it might be hiring somebody, but always be looking at like how you can get that done in the most efficient way.
I love that. Really outcome focused. And as I have to say, that there's riches in the niches.
And then, you know, you do want to, if you're looking to exit, like we always operated as if we were a big company. You know, it's funny thinking back, like when we first started, we were like, there was one other agency we were like, and we would literally say like, oh, but they're like mom and pop. And like, we were literally husband and wife and like, it's like a rec room in our house. But we literally, like looking back, like we literally thought that. Like we literally, like.
You believed it. You believed it. You're like, we're the big guy.
But we always acted like we were a big company. So people didn't, except for the very beginning, but people didn't even know we were married. You know, it was like, it was just really like, treat it like it's a business and bring on other people. Don't be like, it's only you, right? The other thing, the most important thing I would say is you just keep executing. You've just got it, because there's a certain point where it can become really tough. I mean, it's tough in every stage, don't think it's going to be easy. Like if anybody's telling you they can sell you like a blueprint to make this really easy, yeah. and that you're going to work less, run. Like do not give them $20,000 for you to learn it can't be done. So it's going to be a lot of work. And you're going to come to that stage where it might even be boring. Like it might even be to the point where things are steady and you're bored. You want to take on other things, but just keep on going back to that. Like, you know, I do put my clients through a visioning exercise. Keep on going back to that visioning exercise. Yeah. See if you need to make any adjustments, but keep on looking at that. Keep like your compass going in the direction you want to go. And then just know like, because there's different stages, right? And it's a totally different stage to start a business, get going, than it is to run a mature business. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I told you it's funny when you're talking about the time that you have to put into it and the fact that it's reminding me of the 4-hour work week. And I'm like, I always tell people I read the 4-hour work week and they're like, how's that going for you? I'm like, well, it's not quite planned out as you expect it to be. So like 80 hours.
I bet Tim Ferriss works more than 4 hours. Yes. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he does. So, well, awesome. Well, so I've got just the speed round of questions here. We'll jump into and then we can close it out from there. But so what's a belief you held strongly 5 years ago that you've since changed your mind about and why?
Okay. A belief. Oh, I used to think I could change the past. that was an important one because I really did. I mean, honestly, like I went through a lot of rumination trying to change the past. And then I said, after a lot of self-work, I realized I cannot change the past. So I've let go of trying to do that.
That is fantastic. I need to take a note on that one. If you could put a short message on a billboard that millions would see, what would it say and why?
Okay. I would say have the courage to change the things you can. I'm a fan of the Serenity Prayer. I've learned to accept the things I can't change.
Yeah.
But for me, a big part of it is having the courage to change the things I can. So that's, you know, I wear a lion for courage. So that would, you know, or maybe it might just say courage.
What book have you gifted the most often to others or what has had the biggest impact on your life?
Yeah, as far as entrepreneurship, there's a book called Rework. Have you read it?
Yeah.
I love Rework because I find that I take a lot from the startup world and apply it to staffing. There's just like kind of like different perspectives. And I love Rework. It's just like so simple and straightforward. And that's the one I gift the most.
Yeah, that's a great book. Those guys they have a whole series of books that are amazing. So that's awesome. Any closing comments for the audience?
Okay, yes. I will say, if you're thinking about starting a staffing agency, it's not as complicated as you might think it is. So just get some help and just do it. I mean, I'm so built to be an entrepreneur, but just get the education for at least, you know, understand what's involved. Yeah. And if you decide that's the leap that you want to make, then it's there for you.
Awesome. Well, Diane, really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks, David. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.